It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Matt Deegan. On the show this week, Reach announces layoffs of almost 10% of their staff. We look at why. Also on the programme, BBC Studios enters the audio market, as does James Corden, and why Carol Vorderman becomes the first casualty of Lineker's Law. Plus, in the media quiz, we pit the pundits against each other in our very own Squid Games. That's all coming up on this edition of the Media Podcast. In the news this week, the actors' strike in Hollywood ended on Thursday after SAG-AFTRA came to an agreement with streamers and broadcasters. Actors will receive protections against AI and a 7% pay increase. Film and TV production is expected to resume shortly. Media stock prices rose after the end of the actors' strike, with the Walt Disney Company gaining 6% after they opened this Wednesday, which comes after widespread cutbacks from CEO Bob Iger, who recently fired around 3% of the workforce, all in hopes of achieving an estimated £6.1 billion in cost savings. Sir William Lewis, or Will Lewis, will lead the Washington Post as the paper's new CEO and publisher, it was announced on Sunday. The veteran media exec hopes to bring in younger audiences, use AI as a supplement, and implement personalised offerings for new customers. Now, joining me at the London Podcast Studios are two intrepid players of the media game. First up, making her media podcast debut, is the founder of Carver PR, Megan Carver.
Hi, Matt Deegan.
It's lovely to see you.
Oh, it's so nice to be here. Thank you.
Now, like an absolute pro, you've already defined off-air what you will and won't talk about, which I think is brilliant. But can you give us any gossip?
Do you know what? Rylan, who's one of my clients, every time I see him, he says, got any gossip, babe? And every time I say to him, I have Ryan, loads of it, and I cannot tell you a single thing. So I do have lots of gossip, but I can't share that.
Tough. But one of your clients has been very busy and might be even more busy across a bridge.
Oh, the lovely Ian Wright. Yeah. So Ian was awarded the Freedom of the City of London last week. And actually, this is kind of good gossip. But not really. You go to this ceremony, which is performed by this incredible woman, and you stand in a room with some of Ian's friends and family and closest kind of friends that have got him to where he is. Anyway, this wonderful woman does this whole speech around the ceremony and why it's important. And then Ian signs a book. This book, she declares, is the most incredible autograph book in the whole world. And it's true. This book that he has signed has also got Florence Nightingale's signature. It has got Nelson Mandela's. It's got Stephen Hawking's thumbprint. It is literally the most incredible autograph book I've ever seen. But yes, Ian has quite rightly been awarded this, and he can now take sheep across, I want to say, London Bridge. Yeah. Tower Bridge. Amazing. London Bridge, yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
That's fun, isn't it?
And be a lovely media shot when you need something. You've got that always as an option.
I think there's a rule now that says it has to be done for a charity. I don't think you can just rock up and be like,
his
Bobby.
And alongside Megan, welcome back, Jamie East.
Hey, first time in person.
With a new job title.
Yes.
What are you doing now?
I'm the head of podcast for DMG.
That's exciting.
It's unexpected. Very exciting.
For them or for you? Or
for both of us, I think. I think, you know, it was an interesting call. It's not a call you expect every day. I went fully expecting it to not be my bag and actually found the challenge and the opportunity just quite exciting.
Well, you've also had to move away from the other thing you were doing, which was a daily news podcast. But amazingly, you've somehow sort of retained the job.
Explain. Bobby Ewing. Yeah.
Yes, explain what's happened.
So the Smart 7 has been going for, you know, three and a half, nearly 4 years now, probably. And, you know, still going great guns, very successful. As part of my you know, I can't do what I'm doing now and still get up at like silly o'clock and be involved in another kind of quite intense production schedule. So Liam, my Thompson, my business partner, still runs that along with the team there. And since that, you know, it's not an ego thing. I would like to just state that. It was an interesting challenge, really. I've been tinkering around with AI for quite a while, and a good friend of mine, Luke Franks, who lives in that world. Brilliant lad. Spoke to him and I said, look, how good is it now? Because, you know, we've all gone on to ChatGPT, we've all gone on to DALL-E, and it's kind of 40% there, which is fine if you're just looking for an image. But when you're talking about voice, it's quite difficult. And then a layer on that, when you're talking about someone in particular's voice, it's even more difficult. It's quite easy to get just a regular voice. That's quite normal now. But I was interested to see how... I'm always looking for efficiencies in the production workflow. And the most inefficient part of the whole of the Smart 7 was me actually reading it every morning. And if there was a way of bypassing that, then that was quite exciting to me. So I worked quite hard with him and a company called 11 Labs, who have the best AI engine. And I went and I had to upload 3-4 hours worth of my voice, which was like the worst, obviously awful to have to kind of like compile.
Did you just read Wikipedia for 3 hours?
Well, luckily, because I've been doing the Smart 7 for so long, and I'm very fastidious in my archiving, I've got many more hours than that in kind of like radio quality voiceover stuff. Uploaded all of that. It took about a week, 10 days for them to kind of like crunch it. And what came back was like genuinely scary. And we decided to kind of jump, you know, take the leap. So the weekday editions are now JAIME East doing that. At the weekends, we still have Kira Revins, who's a real live human, doing it. And of course, like any advertising and branded podcasts are all done by humans and creatively and stuff. So it's still researched and written and curated by humans. The only bit that's not is me.
I'd listen, and it is very good.
It's quite weird, isn't it? It makes me sound a bit posher. It's like I'm talking to my mum after being told off. But it's the breaths. It has breaths in it. It has nuance. It has humour. It's very weird.
Well, I will lean over and pinch you just to make sure you are the real Jamie East for the show today. And we start with news that Reach, owners of the Mirror and Express titles, are to let go 450 staff, almost 10% of the workforce, and that the majority of these are going to be journalists. Chief Exec Jim Mullen faced employees on Wednesday amid the backdrop of a declined print circulation too. Megan, Reach, it's quite a big operation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge. It's 130 titles, national and regional. It's Mirror, Express, Star, OK Magazine, Daily Record, Manchester Evening News, Liverpool Echo, loads of those websites that you might see a lot on social media, kind of whatever, Devon Live, Sussex Live, anything with live, essentially. This is really, really big news. And really worrying news for journalists, actually. So there's 450 cuts. 320 of those are going to be editorial. This is the third round of cuts this year. So it's really tough for them. Like you just said, David Higgison, he's blamed the rise of social media, essentially, on this happening. He says that increasingly Facebook and Google opt to keep readers on their own platforms rather than send them to these kind of trustworthy sites, which if they were sending them to the Mirror or Daily Record or any of their sites, they would there get the clicks, they'd get the ad revenue. So he's kind of blaming them for that. TikTok has absolutely no mechanism whatsoever to send audiences to any other websites. So essentially they're saying we've got to fundamentally change what we do and the way that we do it.
So a lot of what they probably built their business on was Facebook and search. And
absolutely.
As all of them did.
All of them did.
I was at the Sun when Facebook were throwing $1 million a year at publishers to make video for them, and then all of a sudden decided that was gone. You know,
Well, they don't even want to talk to them anymore, do they?
No,
they've had very interesting news. Is for Jim, is it a bit of an excuse, or is he half correct and half of it is that they haven't advanced their business quick enough?
You know, I was at the Media Freedom Awards last night, and it was pretty depressing for every, you know, there's a lot of jubilation. You know, people obviously great to receive rewards, and because the vast majority of those were regional awards as well, it put in stark visibility how important local journalism is. And obviously there was a black cloud hanging over the evening. But you know, I don't want to speak out of turn, but Reach is Richard's digital offering isn't great. You know, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And it's, you know, I'm not casting aspersions on anyone, but it's a bad user experience.
They do like an ad on a Reach website.
It's, you know, just as this is purely from a user's point of view, you know, they used to, when it was mirror.co.uk back in the day, it was a good user experience. And I get why it's like that. You know, everyone's chasing the pound. But remove, with all of that, and then removing a layer of the gossamer thin layer of journalism that they were putting up there anyway, is worrying. And, you know, we've been slightly jocular about the use of AI and the stuff that I've been doing, which still relies solely on humans. It's not too big a leap to assume that AI wouldn't be on the card for someone like Reach, because something is going to have to fill those pages. And if there aren't people writing it, then what's it going
to
be?
Megan, obviously you're sending press releases, you're trying to get coverage. Reach titles are a great way to do that for the people in the shows that you represent. You could go, well, this is great news for you because there's less people, and so they're after material and they'll put it up. Is that true? Or actually, is it harder if there aren't relationships you can strike with journalists to tell them stories?
I think there will still be the relationships with the journalists to strike those stories. I think we will still always have our key people that we go to. I think that there will potentially be less people to send the release to, but they'll just be hubs. You know, there's already a Reach hub. So if you do an interview with Notebook, for example, the Mirror supplement on a Sunday, if you do an interview there, that will probably be picked up and running okay. It will probably run in Star. It will probably run on their regionals. So I don't think that will necessarily affect.
That's good for you, right?
I mean, and I don't think from a PR point of view, that's necessarily going to change. I think from what you said earlier around the online digital content, they've had to create and generate a huge amount of stories to try and get the clicks. And I don't disagree with what you said, Jamie, about the user experience on reach.co.uk. There was a point where I was told that digital journalists were being tasked to write 13 stories a day on Katie Price, you know, because for the click rate, really. And there are so many stories that you'll see run in print, that you'll see run on digital, and then you'll see a social post for it, and then it'll run, the same story will run, but the headline will have changed. And sometimes as a publicist, that can be a little bit frustrating, because you're like, I've done one interview with one person, and this is now run in five different places, and the headlines change, and the sentiments change, and that image isn't right either. So you can lose a bit of control on that. But if you've got the strong relationships, I don't think that matters. I think, you know, I was following it closely yesterday on socials, and you're right, it's really depressing for all those people. And journalism is, I don't need to tell you how vital journalism is, right? And good journalists. Historically, journalists used to start in digital and work their way up to print, and print was the place you need to be. We've all changed how we can consume, and you need to be a really great journalist wherever you are. And so I think journalists will write for digital and for print, and those great journalists will do that. There have been some funny memes from journalists over the last 24 hours saying, crossing over to our war correspondent, and they've literally linked to a TikToker dancing. You know, and whilst there's, you know, that's kind of amusing, you do also think, gosh, is what actually David Higgison suggesting here is that this is all going to have to be on socials. And therefore, if you're trying to make a dent in socials, are you going to have great content creators? Because they are not journalists.
I mean, it's a different skill, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And look, this is just the latest version of this story. This is not this first rodeo. You know, you look at radio, you look at local radio and what's gone on there, you look at TV. There's no breeding ground for talent anymore in any creative sector, like whatsoever, whether it's music, whether it's, you know, being an author, whatever it is, you know, there is no platform. And that always used to be local, whether it's the local newspaper. My dad's first gig was in a news agency in Derby. That was how you learn your chops. That's how you toughen yourself up a little bit for the horrible world of the media. And it's the same for radio. Radio One will have a huge problem in 5-10 years time, because they will have no grassroots talent to pull from. They will only have national stations in Wales and Scotland and in Northern Ireland. So, and you cannot fall back on content creators for that. TV tried and failed miserably. You know, they look to people, you know, no offense to people like Zoella and that ilk, that first wave of YouTubers. TV looked at those as the salvation of TV because of their giant following. They tried TV and they were, you know, no offense, they were pretty crap at it. and they retreated from that. Now we're in the situation where there is nowhere, you know, since T4 died, there is nowhere for it to happen.
And also for reduction in CBBC life prayers and all of that side, it's difficult to find those new people.
Yeah.
And also I think in the radio side, I think Dick Stone wrote a piece about this week, where your first gig isn't an overnight, it's probably like on a national radio station somewhere, and you have to get good pretty quickly. Well, talking about TV, some slowdowns, of course, in ad revenue, and ITV is seeing their revenue down by 8% according to its latest growth outlook. That's going to lead to a further 10 million cut in the commissioning budget. Meanwhile, Deadline reports Channel 4 has delayed up to 20 premieres, with producers theorising they want a surplus of new shows for political expediency. A source of Channel 4 denies this. Would it, Jamie, is it useful for Channel 4 to kind of hold back shows until next year to kind of make a fresh start when the revenue is back up, hopefully?
It might make some kind of weird kind of long-term business plan sense, you know, to stockpile a bit of content, especially with actor strikes and, you know, all of the rest of it. There's a danger, though, that they'll come back and start making stuff. And, you know, there's a story I think we'll probably talk about in a bit where the talent just won't be there anymore. You know, there is not an ever-ending line of patience or funds for freelance TV producers and makers and presenters and set designers and all the rest of it to kind of, what are they supposed to do? It's like being furloughed without the furloughing. And it's particularly harsh coming off the back of such a boon in TV as well. You know, the building of so many studios, Netflix building a facility, Sky doing the same thing, you know, so many. It was the future.
Hertfordshire, where I live, is pretty much TV studio central now.
And I just worry, you know, TV is like probably my biggest passion apart from podcasting. And a lot of my friends work in TV, as does everybody's here. It's a horrible time for them. But personal stuff aside, they've got to put some stuff out. You know, we know that the actor strike, the repercussions of the actor strikes in the States are going to hit us pretty hard, probably February time. Mm. What are they going to put out? You know, I know there's so much anecdotal stories of people that have been dealing with Channel 4 over the past year now, where it's just bemusement as to what the hell is going. What are they doing there every day? Because they're certainly not making TV. It's, you know, it's a real worry.
I mean, Megan, your background's audio. Have you noticed a slowdown in TV shows, particularly the ones you work with?
There is not as much that I know that is coming. So normally this time of year, we would go, oh, I know something that's coming. Not necessarily my clients, but anecdotally, we'd have heard about shows that would say, oh, something really big, and or that talent's got something in March. I'd know something that was coming in spring. There'd be something else that'd be rumbling around. I'm just not hearing that. I don't work hugely closely in TV in the same way that you do, Jamie. Obviously, I've got a lot of clients that work in TV, and I've got lots of talent that make great shows there. There is one thing in TV that completely and utterly baffles me, and that's scheduling. I just do not understand it, right? And I would love for someone to sit me down properly and just really explain it to me, because from an outsider's point of view, and I will class myself as an outsider, although I promote and we do a brilliant job at promoting TV shows, but they spend months working on programmes, right? They've come up with a concept, they've gone out to tender, people have pitched, they've gone through this whole process, they've got the talent, they've got all the production teams, they filmed it all, it's beautiful, they've edited it all, everything is made. This is months and months and months and months and months. And then you say, great, when's it on? And they say, we don't know. And you're like, but when will you know? And they'll say, we'll give you 2 weeks' notice. You know, and when you think about the media landscape, I just go, this doesn't make any commercial sense to me. Because I can get a book to number one. I can get an artist album to number one. I can get events sold out. I can get podcast to number one. I can do all of these things with notice, with a strategy, and with a clear plan. I can't get someone on a front cover with 2 weeks' notice. Yeah. You know, I certainly can't get a supplement. They're at least 4 weeks lead time. A glossy's 3 months. So broadcast slots are getting booked up longer and longer in advance. So you kind of go, we've worked all this time and all this energy has gone into this, but now I can't let all the public know and the consumers know. And it feels to me like we're just not creating those moments. We're not building excitement that something is coming. We're not letting audiences know. If we're reliant on, well, it's in listings, you know, great. Well, it's in listings, you know.
Well, also on that, like linear TV's got some trouble in getting people to connect with it. And actually, to Megan's point, are they playing an old game of trying to compete with other linear channels when actually they do need longer lead times? And as you were going to say there, Survivor hasn't quite made the splash that perhaps people thought it was going to.
Well, you know, it's Survivor's a tried and trusted format. There is, you know, on paper, there's no reason why that shouldn't work. It's got, you know, it's Joel Dommett hosting it. It's, you know, it's, they're caught between a rock and a hard place because now Netflix and Amazon and all the streamers just drop stuff. They can afford to just lob it on and people will discover it in 3 months' time and it works a completely different way. Plus, people generally don't watch the teasers that much. It's quite difficult to tease a light entertainment show.
Well, I thought it was interesting because I think it was the first episode after Strictly and they had no promos in between. It was like literally Strictly finished and we were straight into Survivor. So clearly they were...
Oh, sorry, it's a BBC One. I mean, yes. I thought it was ITV One. My bad.
Originally it was. So they really kind of obviously went for it and they probably had a bit of success. They looked at what happened with Traitors.
Yeah.
And that sort of had that slower burn linear side, people catching up on iPlayer and then up to Christmas last year, it really worked for them. But that's maybe looking more like an outlier, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it is just a very old-fashioned approach. You know, I've PR'd TV shows for streamers. Audiences might not know it's coming, but they certainly know what's coming. Audiences, we all know when the next series of The Crown is coming, you know?
Yeah.
You build excitement. Strictly is a moment every single year, as is I'm a Celeb every single year, because we know it's coming. Mm. And a Richard Osman book, people know it's coming. You know, any product that is out there needs to be marketed really, really well. And I know that TV companies and platforms and the channels talk about being really daring. And they're saying we want production companies to come to us with really big and daring ideas and we need to make things that have never been made before. I'd like to suggest that actually changing the scheduling could be a very daring way to do it because it feels so data-driven about what audience were watching 2 weeks ago, on which day, on what platform, and what was the weather like. Mm. And then trying to mimic that and hoping that you might beat those ratings.
Mm, yeah.
And the worst thing is when, and even as a user, as a viewer, when all of a sudden the slot changes.
Mm.
You know, I don't understand any of it.
Yeah.
But like I say, I'm not a TV commissioner, so they probably are experts.
I can't remember when there was a homegrown, exciting, new, revelatory format that hadn't already been, that wasn't imported, you know?
And speaking of BBC Studios, they've officially announced it has entered the commercial audio market with Wondery's Richard Knight and previously ex of BBC Radio 4 leading the operation. Megan, Trade Body Audio UK aren't very happy.
Very unhappy.
About what's going on. What are they saying?
So basically what is happening is that the BBC Studios, they announced, I think it was on Tuesday, so the factual, the entertainment and the drama is going to be produced by BBC Studios, the commercial arm.
So previously kind of things in-house at Radio 4, for example,
would all be made in-house at Radio 4 by their teams.
They've been moved across.
They've all moved across. So essentially indies are going to be able to pitch. There are some exceptions to this in the drama section because The Archers is not moving. Don't quit the hit.
Too many cows and pigs still out of that studio.
Can't deal with that. Yeah. News, Current Affairs, Sports, Music, Nations, they're all staying in-house, although some of those, as we know, are already made by indies. So Audio UK, they're disappointed because their argument is, in TV, 100% of programmes are open to competition. So both BBC, internal and external, can all pitch.
Mm.
In this new announcement, what they've said is that it's going to be 60% of that audio, and I think they are feeling aggrieved and that this is essentially kind of unfair.
Well, one of the dangers for Audio UK is that the BBC have just created a super indie themselves to compete with. I mean, it's tough. I mean, I was reading something that Chloe, who has been on the show, was saying, was that, you know, SMEs have in effect built the commercial audio market in the UK.
100%.
And now the BBC have sort of re-emerged to be in charge.
BBC are always audio. It's so confusing as well. You know, from someone who owned like a small, very small audio production company, trying to even comprehend how to pitch the BBC is just nuts. It's like, you may as well just give up. And it's no wonder people like Something Else steal the march on everybody, because it's a weird process. And, you know, this seems to be similar to like BBC Sounds, where it's like, you can't have the ball and the cake and play the game and eat the cake. And that's what it feels like a little bit. It's tough enough out there for small indies without something like this kind of getting in the way as well.
Time for a break. We'll be back with more media news after this.
This month on The Modern Man, the award-winning magazine show for your ears, we tell the story of Kaz Jane, a woman who takes police officers into the woods and makes them cry. Plus, we explore the trend for philanthrotainment. Is it right for YouTubers to become charities? And our resident relationships expert, Alex Fox, tackles dating after bereavement. And there's music and your letters. It's a packed show. Join me, Ollie Mann, on The Modern Man. That's M-A-N-N, yes, it's a pun on my name. Find us wherever you get your podcasts, or there's a link in the show notes.
Hello, media podcast listeners.
Hello.
This is Matt Kelly from The Two Mats.
And this is Matt Dancona from The Two Mats.
And what did we talk about in our podcast this week, Matt?
A cavalcade of figures. I mean, Suella Braverman, Barack Obama, Nadine Dorries, George Michaels, they're all in there.
It's very entertaining, and it's all about the news and our particular take on it.
So, and a bit of culture as well. We always throw in a bit of culture.
Little bit of culture. Please tune in to The Two Mats, wherever you find your podcast. It's from the New European newspaper, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back. Megan and Jamie are here for more stories. So Vorders gets the chop. Cara Vorderman has fallen foul of what we're calling Lineker's Law.
Oh, I like.
That is, she has lost her Radio Wales show, slash resigned, slash been fired, hard exactly to know, after refusing to comply with the BBC's new social media policy. Jamie, what has happened to poor Carol?
It sounds very... I flounced off Talk Radio because Mark Dolan cut up his mask.
Were you the Carol Vorderman of Talk Radio?
I was the Carol Vorderman of Talk Radio. It was a nice, easy way out for me. Let's put it that way. I suspect this is probably similar. You know, no one gives up. Carol's become a good mouthpiece for her politics and her social justice, and it's brilliant. More power to her elbow. There was always going to be a casualty like this since the rules changed. Fallen on a sword? Not quite sure.
I was looking at all the response to her Twitter post, and obviously it's millions of people going, they'll rue the day that you've left your weekend show on BBC Radio Wales.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, if a fraction of these people had listened to her show on BBC Radio Wales,
it would have been
a slightly different thing. Megan, is this frustrating for celebs, or is this just the price of doing business?
I think it's the price of doing business, you know, and I think fair play to them both, BBC and Carol. You know, they have both respected each other's positions on it. I think they've both come out looking good. The BBC, after Lineker's Law, they had...
Sounds like we're holding a candlelight vigil for him, doesn't it?
I was going to say post kind of the Lineker Suella showdown, which I thought kind of sounded like a more, you know, celebrity wrestle match. They had to do something. You know, they had to make those guidelines a little bit clearer. They've had guidelines forever. They needed to update them for social media. I think it's really quite straightforward. Talent have all been told it very, very clearly. The agents know. I know as a publicist. And it's part of the deal. I think Carol is, my opinion is, I think she's brilliant and I love everything that she says and does. She was in breach of her guidelines, and they had a conversation with her and she was like, right, well, there we go. She could have been really throwing toys out of the pram. She could have really, really gone for them. And actually, I thought her statement was great. It's a difference of opinions.
It was a grown-up statement, wasn't it?
Both got to make your own decisions.
Also, from a broadcaster perspective, sometimes it's quite good to make a sacrifice on the altar.
There is nothing lost here from the BBC going, actually, we have made these rules and we are sticking by those rules. Mm. I think you're absolutely right. And they needed to show it at some point. It was inevitable. And if this is how it had to happen, then I think with Carol's brilliance and her grace and everything about kind of where the show was and the platform, I think it's probably played out very well.
Well, it means that there is no room for manoeuvre with anyone else now. It puts the BBC in, you know, it gives them the higher ground now in terms of like, they could not, you know, I mean, the danger is that like someone really valuable to, no offence, Carol, someone really, really valuable falls foul of it again. They will have no choice. There will be no bending because they have now put a line in the sand.
So we're saying one from the top and none from the bottom.
Exactly. Well, very good, very good.
It's
a conundrum,
point,
that's for sure.
But on that point, what we don't know is actually whether she was sacked or whether they decided to leave. She was in breach of guidelines, but that's not necessarily a complete sackable offence.
No, true. Yeah.
So there sort of might be some wriggle room at some point to go, they're in breach, they've apologised, we have given them a warning. Yeah. But it's an interesting point. Yeah.
James Corden struck an exclusive deal with SiriusXM for his new podcast series. This Life of Mine will be conversations with celebs on the people, places, moments and memories that made them who they are today. Megan, it's partly a little bit Desert Island Discs. I was talking to someone that is involved with this.
Oh, tell me everything.
And they were saying it's going to be a big show.
Oh, I have no doubt. I think this is going to be huge. I'm pretty sure that every single podcast platform would have wanted James Corden. He would have been looking to go somewhere that he can do something brilliant, that has got money and finance behind it, that has got prestige, where he can bring in all of those huge names. I think he is, whatever you think of him, love or hate him, whatever, he is incredibly talented and he attracts huge mainstream audiences. He will create something brilliant for socials. He's always been innovative in what he does. It's interesting you said about Desert Island Discs, because someone said to me today, read that synopsis, feels a bit grounded with Louis Theroux. Yeah. And I'm like, maybe none of that matters. I was, he must be paid a lot for this, right? So Howard Stern is 90 million a year for
like
5 years, something rumoured like that.
Yeah.
You know, so, and also Sirius, yesterday they did the whole rebrand. They relaunched. They've got Kevin Hart, they've got Ashley Flowers, they've got Kelly Clarkson. She was there. They're doing something with Dolly Parton and John Mayer. They are throwing everything.
It's a brand that's never touched the UK, really.
No.
So it's interesting in that it was sort of digital audio before digital audio. So this is kind of satellite radio in America, which is more successful than you'd maybe expect because they don't really have national radio. So actually, if you're driving across the country, you would like to listen to the same thing. This is sort of the only way to do it. And they're sort of evolving that into a digital mobile platform. They bought a Stitcher, big podcast network. They've got quite a bit in ad tech. There's some co-ownership with iHeart. The same owners own them.
They do quite a lot of co-pros as well. I had some dealings with them a couple of years ago around sports programming, and they're quite collaborative, you know, in their approach. And I think if this was 2 years ago, they wouldn't have had a look in. It'd have been on Spotify. Without a shadow of a doubt, and it would have the deal would have probably dwarfed Harry and Meghan and Obama and whatnot. The dumb money in podcasting's gone now. Not that that would have been a dumb investment, but probably would have been.
The easy cash has gone.
I don't think he had many choices. He was in a really difficult position. You know, I think when the show announcement came, you know, everyone was like, well, what's he going to do? But it's not what's he going to do. It's like, well, actually, what can he do? Because, you know, he's an ambitious guy. He's you know, gone over there and made a huge, you know, become one of the, arguably one of the world's biggest TV personalities. Where do you go from there? You don't come back and do the one show. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, there are very few platforms around that would give him the same level of money, the same level of prestige, and attract the same standard of guests that he's used to getting. So there, actually,
if you and look, a chance to take risks. And yeah. I think that's what's going to happen here. I think this is potentially going to really shift so much of that content that exists on podcasts. You know, at the moment, so many podcasts are going, oh, I need to film this and stick it on YouTube. It's like, you wait till Corden's here.
It's going to take I was reading the press release, and everyone's, I think, jumping to a conclusion that it's exclusive to Sirius forever.
They'll need to syndicate the hell out of it. They'll have to syndicate the hell out of it, won't they?
I think it could even be the thing that they get it a week ahead. Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just on there, just in America. I think there's probably more to this than meets the eye.
But it's savvy for Sirius with their rebrand, because not only do you get James, you obviously get Ben Winston, you get Fulwell, you get all of the creative kind of like juggernaut that comes with them. And, you know, Fulwell are just in such a, like, their kind of imperial era at the moment that it's great. So, you know, it's a good investment for
them. Well, I saw Ben Winston speak at the TV festival this year, and he did make a small reference to getting into audio and that they had some exciting plans. But I think this is the beginning of some plans. I don't think it's the end of what they're going to do. Just enough time for the media quiz. This week entitled Fill in the Blanks.
I've not planned it. I've not done my homework.
Shocked faces.
It's all right,
studio.
Jamie. You're always a media geek. You'll know everything.
I'm going to give you a quote from a media news story. All you have to do is fill in the blanks.
Okay.
So buzz in with your names if you know the answer. So Jamie, you will say...
Jamie.
And Megan, you will say...
Megan.
Let's fill in the blanks. Question number one. We assumed at the beginning that they couldn't possibly expect us to blank 456 players.
Oh, Megan.
Megan.
This is Squid Games, the reality show. This blows my mind. I am a bit obsessed with this. I'm a bit obsessed with it. I've actually not watched the proper Squid Games because I'm a wimp. I'm a bit obsessed with this. So it's being made by Studio Lambert, Gogglebox, Traitors, brilliant. This is a global reality show for Netflix, trying to keep so much of the original Squid Games alive that they have got 456 contestants. The prize money is $4.56 million, which is basically the 10,000 per person that takes part.
Yeah.
The thing that is blowing my mind about it that I can't quite get my head around is I know how hard reality shows find it when they've got, like, I don't know, 15 contestants to try and capture everybody because you don't know whether they're going to make the final.
Yeah.
You've got 456. Like, how are you going to be following every person?
I think you need to watch the Squid Game. I think you need to watch the original one to realise that, actually. I don't think they'll care. They will literally scythe through them like a bowling ball through Skittles.
Yeah, but we'll need to see whoever wins. We've got to see the journey from the beginning. So they've got to be... They've got to be filming everybody. Well,
maybe they'll do it retrospectively. They've got so much. They'll film the whole thing, go back and do the stories.
Well, Megan, you buzzed in. Yes. But remember, we're looking for an answer to the question of what
killed.
Is blank.
Killed.
Oh, so contestants.
So we assumed at the beginning that they couldn't possibly expect us to blank 456 players, but they're absolutely clear that they did.
Book, find,
that's
cast.
Not bad. Cast, it is cast. Jamie, you could have stolen, but you didn't.
Sorry.
Very polite.
I am a bit competitive as well, aren't I?
Question number two. Without blank, Rishi would never have been PM.
Jamie. This is Nadine Dorris in a new book serialised in the mail. The blank bit. What was the question?
Without blank, Rishi would never have been PM.
Is it Boris or COVID?
Megan?
See, I'm not going to know the answer because, again, it's something I've not watched. Last year was the first time ever that I'd watched an entire James Bond.
Oh, it's in the bloody title of the...
And it's a James Bond character, I think.
Blofeld.
Sadly not. Dr. No. Without Dr. No, Rishi would never win a PM.
So I was kind of a bit...
Half a point each. Yes. Half a point each. Right, question number three. When you make traditions your own, they are more blank.
Oh, my God.
When you make traditions your own, they are more blank. There's a certain TV advert that came out today.
Oh, John Lewis.
I've been in the
Snappy. It's a Venus fly trap.
Called Snappy. Well, I will reveal the answer. It is special. When you make traditions your own, they are more special. Yeah. This is from the John Lewis ad press release.
What's the song?
This year, it's a catchy Italian rock opera. You don't often hear that in a sentence. By the tenor Andrea Bocelli.
Wow.
Wow.
Have you seen it? Did you see it this morning?
Do you know what? I haven't seen it. I've seen the stills. I do need to watch it.
It's good. It's good. It's good. They've got a different agency this year. So they moved away from Adam and Eve to Saatchi's.
God, that must have been a gutting kind of pitch process.
Well, they didn't even pitch for it.
Didn't they?
No.
They jumped before they...
Well, they just thought, oh, this is devastating, isn't it? looking at it, Saatchi's have tried to change it a little bit because obviously they can't just duplicate what went before. I think it's not bad. I think maybe it's a good build for the rest of the year, but I think also it's going to be a sort of John Lewis cinematic universe in that this is like the core ad, and then Snappy and the products will be sort of around.
Oh, nice.
It make you cry?
It did not make me cry.
Oh, that's a shame.
Which I think, again, is a intention.
Okay.
To try and not duplicate what went before. So, scores. I think that means 1.5 points to Megan and no points to Jamie.
Oh,
I think he got half a point at some point.
Megan, you get to look at our casting process for the media podcast spin-off quiz show. That we'll send to Netflix. thank you to Megan Carver and Jamie East. Where can listeners keep up with what you and Carver PR are doing?
We are probably all over our socials or our website. So we are just at Carver PR. Online and on Insta.
And Jamie, what's next in the production pipeline?
Oh my goodness. What can I tell you? We've got we're doing one about The Crown. It's coming up. That's on DMG. The Crown Fact or Fiction's coming up. But if you're into your true crime, the trial, Ashley Murphy is wrapping today, actually, as we record. The verdict came out about an hour and a half ago.
Lovely. Go and find them wherever you find your podcasts. Thank you both.
Pleasure. Thank you very much. Thanks for...
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, thanks, Matt Deacon.
And that's it from us today at the London Podcast Studios. Remember, you can get 25% off your first booking when you use the code MEDIAPOD at thelondonpodcaststudios.com. That's MEDIAPOD at thelondonpodcaststudios.com for 25% off. Remember to send the ones you love to podfollow.com/themediapodcast. Remember, the Media Podcast is for life, not just for Christmas. My name is Matt Deegan. The producer was Matt Hill, with support from Maya Cedar Lund. It was a Rethink Audio production. I'll see you next week.